Welcome. I want to welcome each of you. This is the Deeper Conversations coaching class. I'm Ann Kelly, and I am happy to be joined today by Elaine, Elizabeth, Shalil, Terry, and Ellen. And let me go ahead and share our group agreements. Do we have a volunteer who would please read our group agreements for us?
I'm happy to do it, Andy.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay. Number one, confidentiality. We agreed to keep all information we hear within the classes or from our classmates confidential. This includes our live classes and listening to audios of the classes. Number two, positive focus. We agree to give positive feedback, to acknowledge versus criticize, to be accepting. Number three, hold the space. We agree to listen without interruption. Number four, presence. We agree to be fully present to the class without distraction or multitasking. Number five, beginner's mind. We agree to be curious and open, letting it all unfold. Number six, self-responsibility. We agree to practice excellent self-care. Number seven, coaching feedback. We agree that only positive acknowledgments are offered by the class participants after the coaching, focusing on the competencies observed and the strengths of the coach. The class facilitators may offer some mentoring feedback designed to further the learning of the coach and of the class participants. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much, Terry. That is certainly my intention. Would you give me a little auditory
Yes.
visual
Yes.
sign that you're add your intention to mind to be mindful of these agreements during our time together today? Thank you very much. Okay. Who would like to share a connection or clearing process? That's what I heard this opportunity called in the coach training I attended. A little beginning of a session where we might offer a visualization, a breathing opportunity, a connecting, a clearing, and a connecting opportunity. If you have a process you use, particularly if you're one of my soulmates, and I found it hard to practice, and I'll just call them connections for simplicity's sake. I found it hard to practice them because I was sure there was an absolute right way and I wasn't going to do it, and I was hesitant to practice. This is where I practiced. I took this class in 2012 so I could come here and I could practice here safely and do that. So if you have a process, maybe one you haven't tried yet with a client, this is an opportunity to do that right now, to give us about a 60-second, 90-second connection clearing for our class.
I have one in.
Ellen, thank you so much. And Ellen, would you like a, or I don't know what I'm hearing. Some feedback and things, and I don't know how to diagnose that. It may or may not be on the phone or any of us on the phone. No, then I do not know. That's my only guess. Does anyone else hear a little feedback, a little sound?
I do.
And I Elizabeth, you're on mute. And if you have the solution, I want to hear it.
I was just going to suggest that Elaine and Shalil mute themselves and see if that
Yeah.
makes sense.
Okay.
If we're all muted except for who's talking, that I think should help.
That'll help narrow it down. Thank you. Excellent. And Ellen, would you thank you so much for volunteering. Would you like us to have our cameras on, cameras off? You lead us and let us know what you suggest.
I'm gonna just turn mine off, and then everybody else wants to. It's just a breathing exercise that you may have heard one. That's the 4-7-8 method. I use this when I can't ground, like I'm noticing I'm anxious and I'm moving quickly, and this slows my breathing down. A lot of people use it before they go to sleep. I've discussed this with clients before, and you may have heard it. But I'm gonna turn my camera off. that just is, and then it doesn't take very long. So I'm just going to get going. Here we go. Stop my video. Okay, so this is called the 4-7-8 method. So you can do this sitting or standing or actually even laying in bed. I don't know if any of us are laying in bed right now, but if you're sitting in your chair, just sit upright with your sit bones on your chair. And the first thing you're going to do is completely exhale through your mouth. And we're going to make a sound when we do that. So you just go, exhale out, close your mouth, and quietly inhale through your nose to a count of four. So I'm going to close my mouth and then count to four. Exhale out. I've inhaled now through my nose to four. And now hold your breath here for a count of seven. We can practice this before we do it. So hold it in for seven. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. And now you're going to exhale out with that same swoosh sound for a count of eight. It's hard to get to eight, but you're going to exhale through eight. So you're going to exhale out. Here's the process. Close your mouth and inhale through your nose to four. That's the four part. And then hold your breath for seven, seven part. Exhale for eight. And so we'll do that a couple of times. So I'm going to start again. Exhale out. Close my mouth. Inhale quietly through for four, my nose. Hold it for seven. Three, four, five, six, seven. Exhale out for eight. Again, inhale for four through my nose. Hold it for seven. Exhale for eight. One more time through the nose for four. Hold it for seven. Exhale for eight. Okay, if you closed your eyes, you can slowly open them, come back to the room. I find it's really easy when I do this to do exhale out and just do four in, hold seven, eight out. But I use that to calm me quite a bit. Sometimes I get, particularly if I'm in a big meeting and I can find myself not grounding, I do that.
That's nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I figured out after a couple of them that I need to take a big count of four breath or I won't be able to get it out for eight.
Yeah, no, I mean, and again, just do exactly, do what you can there. It does get easier.
Yeah, yeah, as you get into the rhythm of it. And, yeah. You know, you can do that at a time nobody would know you're doing it, right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
It could be kind of a secret, like a meeting thing or a under the gun thing. Cool. Oh, that's easy. You teach that to your clients. I'd love that. I'm going to do that too.
Just those, like, I have a couple that have a hard time sleeping. So they tell me things that they're doing and sometimes we try an exercise together to ground.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ellen. Thank you very much. What a lovely opening. Thank you. Thank you. Next, we have no new students coming in. And what I'd like to do now is on Mondays, we offer the opportunity to look back to the previous week and the previous topic, which I show as maintains presence. So important. For those of you who attended or any coach, really, we certainly understand maintains presence. What would you like to update us on? What got a little clearer for you in the week in between maintains presence last Monday and today? What got a little fuzzier for you? about maintaining presence? And were you able to incorporate more presence into your coaching practice, into your life after last Monday's topic? Really, anything you'd like to share on that, we'd love to hear. I'm just curious, how many of you attended last Monday maintains presence? One. Two. Okay. Ellen and Shalil, anything you'd like to share from presence?
I can look at my notes.
Sure. And even if you were not present, what might you have focused on in a discussion of maintains presence?
I listened to the recording and I had a lot of input to last Wednesday based on my thoughts.
Can you give us a little abbreviated version, Elizabeth?
Oh man, I could find my notes that I had. Well, I could give you a segue between maintains presence and today is active listening, right? Okay. I don't know if anybody reads the Sunday New York Times, but there was a really interesting article in the Sunday opinion section written by David Brooks, who is a columnist. And the title is Ask Better Questions, Really Listen, Be Vulnerable, Make Others Feel Known, Make Others Feel Known, The Essential Skills for Being Human. And it's a beautiful, very lengthy article about how much people don't ask each other questions, don't listen, aren't present. His point is that he thinks it's a moral issue for being human. And I just thought, in light of what we've been talking about and what we were going to be talking about today, I just thought that was really very interesting and pertinent.
What a great connection, a moral issue for our times.
Exactly.
For all of us. And he wasn't calling out coaches, he was calling out beings.
Yeah. It was for the general reading public. And wow. He speculates, I don't think if this is like hard research, but he speculates that 30% of the population actually listen to each other.
I think that's high. I don't know.
ask questions. Yeah, it may be high.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that people actually do to listen is to be able to respond in a way that makes them look smart and clever, rather than trying to sort of understand what the other person's position is or what the challenges that they're facing. Mm-hmm. So 30% listening, I think a good chunk of that would be people would be trying to be looking smart. If I can give a repartee to that, then that makes you look clever and smart.
I think that's wise on your part. Very astute. And the other percent are listening to rebut, right?
the other percent are just coaches at work.
small percentage.
Well, I think we'll always have jobs because that just tells me that nobody feels heard in our society. And to have a safe place that's confidential, to be human and real.
You know, one of the quotes I have in my notes that was just reviewing it, and everybody just really spoke to me, is when Julie shared, I think it was the Nicholas Yanni, I'm not sure, but it's the presence is saying through action and in presence, I'm here and I'm available and I have space for you and me.
Mm-hmm. And adding to Nicholas Yanni in The Leader as Healer, it also says mastery is the deepening of presence, not the mastery of skills.
Ooh, say that one more time, please.
Mastery is the deepening of presence, not the mastery of skills.
I just want to comment on, I listened to the sessions last week and I was so amazed with the evidence of presence that was, I was observing in the class with all of you, in the conversations, obviously in the coaching, and it was kind of a masterclass in presence in a lot of ways. I just thought the listening was so deep, the reflecting on what was going on and the insights that were coming up was just, I need to tell you how powerful it was in my weakened state. It was a big part of feeling better. So anyway, I just want to say that. And I had an incident in my own life with one of my daughters being very, very upset over something and calling me actually as I'm listening to the recording, and she's just totally, totally ready to blow up with whatever and in anger and so on and so forth, not with me, but with something that's going on in her life. And it was really, I thought, this is a message to me, you know, here I am, I'm listening about presence. I will be present with this conversation. I won't go off in an emotional tangent with her and all. Anyway, it was so powerful with her. And I thought that you mentioned earlier, Anne, in your life as well. And it's so true that, you know, when we bring our best selves to our interactions with everybody we deal with. And sometimes it's, you know, with your kids, there are certain knee-jerk ways you respond to certain things. I'm sorry to say I'm not always as present as I was last week coming out of your class. But I just really appreciated the whole conversation. And it was such a demonstration of the power of presence, to the point that Shalila is making as well, about that it's not about being perfect. That is the most important thing of all, is how we come to the conversation. So share that.
Elaine, this happened to me a couple of weeks ago. It was very relatable when you said sometimes we don't respond to our family or our kids, you know, the way we would with a client. So my daughter was having a situation, a big situation. And of course, I go into, oh my gosh, we can't let you lose your job, right? We need to get the resume ready. And so we're talking, I think I'm just being a good mom, right? I'm like, well, you know, we'll help you with the, you know, whatever. I don't know, whatever. And then I learn later that she calls her brother and apparently she says to him, mom's just wanting to be in fixing mode. I just need to talk to them. She needed to call somebody else. It wouldn't be in fixing mode and would just let her vent, you know? And he said, mom, it wasn't easy, but that's what she needed.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely along the lines of, I mean, my response is number one, to be angry, not with her, but at whom she's angry at. Mm. And my second response is, oh my goodness, I need to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And this is what I fight in my coaching often as well. I mean, it is the challenge that I think is written out in the competencies here somewhere, that the two things is we're in a very emotional situation, or we're in a situation where we're, you know, where we're wanting to fix it, mm-hmm. solve the problem. Yeah.
Thank you. Anything else to share that came up for you around the competency of presence before we move on to listening?
I don't, yeah. So not with our presence, but how many of us have gone through a situation where we are laser focused in? Now, I don't do Zoom, so this is all kind of foreign for me, but my mom on the phone, right? Laser focused, shut my laptop down. I'm on the call with the client, but you can hear their sound of their laptop as stuff's coming in, or you can hear that. So they haven't shut down, or you can hear them texting or typing. You know, they're like, how do we set the boundary to keep them present too? So they're not multitasking 14 things and really getting into their time with us better. So it's the other side of you know, maintaining presence. I think, well, of course, I'm working with executives all the time. They're, you know, going like crazy. Does anybody say anything? Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
One thing that's stood out for me is that if the matter under consideration or under discussion is really, really important, they'll keep everything else aside. Mm-hmm. But if it's not so important, you might have something going on the side. Like, as you said, you could have the keyboard clacking and it can hear that. And there might be some other distractions, which they allow themselves to be distracted. So that's part of the week. That's part of it. I wouldn't say it's completely it. But part of that is, so if you have an issue that's really important to you and you want to talk about it, you would keep everything else away and just focus on that completely and tell yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the thing.
Yeah.
Ellen.
Yeah, I think my answer is slightly more tactical. That should be handled in agreements and how you're going to work together. And if it's not spelled out in your contract, what it is for me is if the client needs to take a break, like this is a distraction-free environment.
Hmm.
I am coaching via video. Every now and then something will come up and my client has to do audio, and that's totally fine. If they would have to excuse themselves and say, like, I need to answer this, I'm really sorry. And then we have that agreement in place. But if I did have a client that I could hear them clacking away and I was video and I couldn't see them, I would bring that into coaching, the coaching environment as the coach, and say, I'm noticing you're distracted. You know, can you tell me about that? I'd be curious about that, because that's, they're paying you and that's their time.
Right.
And I, you know, it's a, if it happened once, sure, it'd be like anything. Like if somebody were late, then you have to bring that. Then I would bring that in the coaching.
I like that. Don't just redirect it. Use it.
Yeah, it's kind of like ground rules when you're facilitating a meeting. If you agree to the ways that you're going to operate, when those things don't happen, then you can go back to that. Like, hey, we agreed to this. I'm wondering what's going on, you know, yeah. And this is our time together. And so you can bring it back in.
I don't have that in my contract. I don't have anything about that in my contract. Do you all?
You know, personally, Terry, I don't, because okay. I don't have about that we're going to be, you know, I talk about that it's focused and dedicated time together in my mm-hmm. contract, and I'm the coach, I'm going to be guiding them. I'm not giving, you know, all that coach yeah. stuff that you see in ICF stuff in many contracts.
Right.
I don't specifically have in there about rules of engagement or like ground rules, like I might when I facilitate a meeting.
Mm.
But I would certainly, if that's what's happening, bring that into coaching.
That's cool. It doesn't happen often, but when I saw the topic last week was maintains presence, I thought, I'm curious about that, because that has happened for me.
I'm curious, what do you do when it happens? Do you just wait?
They can normally multitask, which blows my mind. But, you know, because I am so only wanting to be with them. It's like when you're in a conversation with somebody, I'm like eyes, you know, in person, you're like really connecting. And so for me, that's what I'm doing in my coaching. So I have all the distractions gone. Right. And so it's just a noticing. It's been a noticing.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, do you have your hand up?
Yeah. I think a lot of people believe they can multitask, but neuroscience shows us that we can do multiple things poorly. We can't do multiple, the brain can't do multiple things well. And I do have it in my agreement that the client will have their cell phone off and that they will be free from distraction and focused on the coaching. The one, and I agree with what Ellen said, that certainly there are some calls that come in or an email that the person, if this is the case, the person, the client often will say ahead of time, I'm expecting an important call. I may have to interrupt. And I'll say, that's fine. But the one thing that came up during COVID that I just thought I had to go with was because people were working from home, very often there were children coming in and out of the room or, you know, requiring attention. And to me, that just seemed like this is their life, you know. And and it was a look for me at some of the chaos, if that's the right word, or the distractions that kept the individual from being able to focus.
I love it that you have it in your contract. You really spell that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with the, if you're hearing clacking, sometimes clients are taking notes on their computer. So that's another thing you could ask. Instead of assuming they're distracting, you could say, you know, I hear you typing. Are you multitasking or are you taking notes? Or can you tell me about that?
I love how you guys go straight in.
Well, thank you. A lot. There was a lot there in that competency of presence. Quite a bit, both for those of you that attended and who listened to the recording. Very good. Well, thank you. Since presence sets us up so well into active listening, let me make that transition now, and we will discuss active listening will be our topic today. Let me show the competencies. And we are in the competencies. Sometimes we talk about the markers. Sometimes we talk about the competencies. If you are not seeing what I'm seeing on the screen, you may be looking at the PCC markers. These are the core competencies. So that usually helps, helps with that. The definition of listens actively focuses on what the client is and is not saying to fully understand what is being communicated in the context of the client systems and to support client self-expression. That's the definition. Now, describe to me how active listening for you differs from what I'll call everyday listening.
This is Terry. I ask more questions than I talk in active listening than in everyday conversation. I'm thinking of like a husband conversation. It's more tactical. There's more of a back and forth, but I'm with a goal in, like, you know, with a goal in mind or something. But whereas when I'm coaching, it's more questions and I guess less talking, I guess, if I'm to put that in words.
I like that, Terry, because it's observable. It could, I could even gather data. Artificial intelligence could break down a session by the number of questions, by the how much time the coach is speaking, when the client's speaking. How else? What do you notice in your listening when you're actively listening versus general listening, we'll call it?
This Ellen, I'm working a little bit harder, I notice. I mean, if a thought comes in, like I'm really listening to someone. Like if it's a friend, I feel like I'm just more attuned. So it's an active for me listening, because I'll notice if a thought comes in and I'll just, and sometimes, you know, a thought will come in like, I'm noticing this about the client, and you know, a question like, you know, like, where could I take this? Sometimes that comes really, or I might, like, I guess honestly, it's like kind of bookmark it. Like, I heard this, I want to let them finish. And so it's much more work, I think. I'm witnessing myself, witnessing them, you know, it's kind of the observer a little bit too. Whereas if I'm just in a conversation with somebody, I'm kind of speaking freely. So I active listening to me is a little bit more kind of conscious attention.
Ooh, I like that. Conscious attention.
Thank you, Ellen. Ellen said it's a lot more work, active listening. What do you think, coaches?
Well, I certainly agree with what Ellen said about monitoring my own reactions and evaluating what's going to be additive to the discussion and what's just my thought or my impulse or my identification or something like that. So in that way, I think, yes, you're both listening attentively to the other person, but you're also listening attentively to yourself and screening for what's going to add to the discussion and what's more of what you would do it with a friend.
Sometimes I think it feels almost kind of impressionistic because it isn't that we're listening so much for every word and the content of every word as much as something prominent that sort of sticks out for us, which is, I guess, watching ourselves in that way. My experience, very often clients are just kind of a blizzard of information. And, you know, I'm almost listening without understanding a lot of what's being said or being able to reproduce it, sort of noting some of those things that are really standing out for me as being significant, either in the way they said it or in how it relates to something else we're working on. So that's one of the differences. It's not always like that, but I think we're not listening for content. I think that's along the lines of what you were saying, in the same way as we're listening for impressions of and picking out of what is relevant to where we're going.
I want to agree with Ellen in when she says it is work. And sometimes it's also hard work. Adding to what Elaine as well said, you're looking not just for content, but you're also looking at the paralanguage in terms of how that content is being delivered. What's the energy that's actually coming with the content? Is there a drop in the decibel level? Is there a significance? Is there a spike in the way that they say it? Sometimes even the choice of words comes up. So there is a lot. Active listening is not just the words itself, but it's also about how the words are being delivered. And that is work. In fact, the easy part of it is, I find it very easy to be able to listen to people and get content. So I do this at a lot of training session and facilitative processes. I actually make it a point to get myself introduced to all of the people, and I might just get their first name and where they're from or something of that sort, just to create a context. And within about 5 to 10 minutes, I remember the names of all of something like about 25 people who are in the room. That's an easy thing. For me, that's an easy thing. What's more important, and which is where what Ellen said is work, is how have they said it? Some people might be forthcoming, might be easy in terms of forthcoming and telling us what it is, but being able to make those little shifts, make out those little shifts, that is work. And that, I think, is what active listening is all about.
Thank you, Shalil. I am in awe. I wish I could remember names that well. That is a superpower.
I agree.
But you, what you were sharing, Shalil, that I heard was, it's how is that delivered? Because all 25 could have said, I'm fine, I'm having a nice day. I'm fine, I'm having a nice day. I'm fine, I'm having a nice day. So how was it delivered? How was it delivered? Because I'm listening for tone, body language, facial expressions, shifts. There's all, as all of you have said, there's a lot going on when we're listening. A lot, and then myself included as well. I want to kind of continue exploring what's going on, and particularly the who of my client. I want to go back and show you this competency, this flying competency. It flies. When I read this, here's the definition. Focuses on what the client is and is not saying to fully understand what's being communicated. I want to talk about the next few words. In the context of the client systems. If you don't have the competencies right in front of you, just jot that phrase down, please. In the context of the client systems. So here's another layer in which I am listening. I am listening for the context that will be provided to me when I hear the client systems. What are the client systems? What are some examples of a client systems?
Well, culture, family, work environment, the culture of the corporation or the organization, friendships, to start.
Yeah. Thank you, Elizabeth. I go to 6.1. Here are a couple. Considers the client's context, identity, environment, experiences, values, and beliefs. That's just a couple. That's just a couple to enhance understanding of what the client is communicating. Understand me through the systems I inhabit. What other systems might your clients live in, exposed to, operate in?
Well, race and this says identity, which is an interesting internal system, more than an external one. But people will definitely respond to both one's race and gender identity.
To the point that now on LinkedIn, people put up their pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
after the competencies were updated, I added a question to my coaching agreement. And the question was this, it asked, this is for my new clients. This is the written coaching agreement my new clients get to review and fill out and send back to me before we start coaching. I've included a question that says, how have your context, identity, environment, experiences, values, and beliefs shaped who you are today? I lifted it right out of 6.1. Because I want that information. I'd like to know the first time we meet, if possible. How have your context, identity, environment, experiences, values, and beliefs shaped who you are today. 6.1 in the competencies, not the markers. And when I started doing that, pretty much universally, clients would say, I love that question, because it lets them go where they want to go. I want to tell you this part of my story, whatever that is. Whatever that is. There's a way to get that information right from the get-go. We are about halfway through. We have an exercise coming up. So this would actually be a nice place to take a quick 3-minute break. Anybody like a little break? Who doesn't like a little break? All right. We'll be back in at 10 till the hour. I will see you then. Thank you. Be right back. You think they're coming back, Shalil?
I don't know.
It's hard to take a 3-minute.
They
vote.
Are.
All right.
I'm going to just pretty quickly review a little bit more of the sub skills under communicating effectively, because in our exercise, we will be demonstrating those with mastery, with great mastery. We've mentioned 6.1, the client systems. 6.2, reflecting and summarizing, is a bedrock foundational skill of coaching. So you've brought forth three issues, or I'm paraphrasing, I'm summarizing for both of us so that I can ensure I heard you correctly and I understand, and also so that my client has the opportunity to say, yes, exactly, or no, I want to, you got that a little bit wrong, or I want to add to that, or when they hear that spoken. Recognizing and inquiring when there is more to what the client is communicating is an art that we are called on to exhibit. There's more to what the client is communicating, and then we are called on to first, of course, recognize that and inquire. And inquire. And our exercise will shed some light on this. The fourth skill, notice, acknowledge, and explores. So again, notice. The first word in the second is, in the third is recognize. In four, it's notice. So I have to be aware. I have to be present. We were talking about presence. I have to know it's happening. I have to recognize it and notice it. I notice, acknowledge, and explore my client's emotions, energy shifts, nonverbal cues, or other behaviors. So let's do an exercise. There are two more, but let's do a little exercise that will help us focus on these first four. So for this, I'd like a volunteer to share a true story with us, maybe that runs a minute or two. So something true, a story that holds some significance for you. It can be about an animal. It can be about a friend, a location, an experience that you had. Something true, fill us in what that was like for about a minute and a half. And then I would like the rest of us briefly, little sound bites, to reflect back what we heard. So I might say, based on your tone of voice, your energy level, this seems important to you. Your facial expression changed there. I wonder. So I'm in the role of coach, sharing back with you, sharing your story on what I perceive is important to you based on how I heard it. We're all going to practice this. We're all going to practice. Who has a little story you'd like to share with us? Again, about a minute. Minute and a half, tell us enough details so that we can glean from that what is important to you, why that was meaningful to you, and the rest of us will listen and provide feedback. I'd like a couple of folks to try this out. Ellen, thank you. So this is a true story from Ellen. And I just want to, since this is our first one, the rest of us are going to listen through the lens of active listening. So we're going to notice words, tone of voice, body language, We're looking for the whole message of what's important to the speaker. What questions do you have on what we're about to do? Okay, Ellen, give us about a little minute and a half on your story. And thank you very much for volunteering. And feel free to jot down what you hear, what you see, what you intuit is important to Ellen.
Thank you. You're welcome. Hi, everybody. I'm going to share a story with you that happened recently about 30 days ago. We moved from abroad and we're waiting for our shipment to come. It takes about 8 or 9 weeks for your things to come across. And so we had our move the beginning of October, and it was a spanned over 3 days. They brought it in 3 shipments. And the process is when the shipment comes, you stand by the truck with a checklist to make sure that everything from your goods is being delivered. And there's a numbering system. And the numbering system that the movers used on the Europe side and the Swiss side was illegible. So there's probably about 300 items and you check off a box. And so in that process of just checking off the things as they're coming off the truck, about 50% of the numbers were represented. So you don't know what's missing or what's not. And meanwhile, you need to stay a little bit. Yeah, you have to, I stay calm. It's a pretty straightforward task. But then as things start coming off, you notice that things are damaged too. Or I notice that things are damaged. And that starts this, you know, this duality of reacting to the thing that your items are damaged and not packed with care, and that the system that they used that you've already paid for doesn't work, is defunct. And then you have to open things up to see how damaged they are. So it's a process that I'm somewhat familiar with, and the feeling that I have a swirl of feelings around it. One is frustration. One is trying to check in on my attachment to my things. And I've come to the conclusions it's not really about that. It's about paying for something and then having whatever you paid for and promised in that to be followed through on. So it's a myriad of emotions. And as far as moves goes, this was the worst one. And then my children are around and my husband, and I'm not, you know, so I do keep myself composed, but there's a level of frustration running so deep within my body. And then, so it's a struggle. It's a struggle. And now we're cleaning it up, right? And then we have to, now they put the process on us to figure it all out. And, you know, there's some things. This is me jumping ahead, and I'm now filling out claim forms, and things are broken, and some things are, and they really put the onus on the client to make it hard. And I come to this conclusion of just about some of the unjustness in life that so many people face. And this was, I'll get through this. It's an administrative nightmare, and my thing, they're just things. And that there's a lot of unjust things that happen in the world. And this was worth the price of my family going to Europe for 4 years and having the experience. But I want you all to know that during the time of the truck and the afterwards and the that, it's not always that calm for me, even though I can hold that meta concept up here. The actual frustration and the disappointment and the anger at the people who lied to me, you know, over on the other side. And when I saw them wrap something, I'm like, you're going to put that in a crate, right? We paid for a crate for that. Mm-hmm. And then the crate doesn't show up. So it's such a crazy swirl of emotions. I know I come to the good place on it, but it's so much work. Not to let it get me.
Ellen, thank you. Thank you. As someone who has many, many, many moving stickers on many of the items in my house, it was work not letting it get to you. What did you hear in Ellen's description? And thank you very much. That was a great example. I think a lot of us can relate. It had emotion in there. It had logistics in there. It had family. It had people. It had a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. What did you hear in Ellen's description that you might bring out in a coaching session as saying, hey, this seemed important to you?
I thought there was a lot of restraint, holding oneself back, wanting to let go of it. And you use the words of the duality of trying to sort of hold yourself and the emotions that you're going through. And you're also looking up and you are visualizing what exactly it was that was actually happening at that point of time.
Mm-hmm.
And you were not enjoying that. That visualization was not something that you enjoyed. And that you had a very plain, neutral face. You might have even looked very disturbed, but it's probably your restraint that was also holding you back as well. So I felt that there was a lot of restraint in the way that you actually said that. And finally, you said, it's worth not letting it get at you. So if this was a coaching conversation, I would have actually asked, are you sure it didn't get to you?
And still.
Thank you, Shalil. What did you hear? What did you see? What did you witness? What did you intuit? What do you surmise?
I thought Ellen was fighting a lot with herself just in telling the story. And as she went into it more, sometimes I wasn't looking at the screen because I was trying to write notes, right? But I heard her pace of her words speed up. She started talking faster. And I know that's often like the anxiety or like nervousness or something, right? So she got back into it and just telling the story. And it wasn't calm like Ellen talks. It was like faster, right? Yeah. And I noticed she'd glance up. I think that was the visualizing, going back and seeing it again, right? I think that's what that is, Shalil. I'm not sure. But so you could feel the anxiety building in just a minute and a half, just by the pace of her language. It was really cool to watch it and hear it.
Thank you, Terry.
I think if it was in a coaching session, I'd really want to give Ellen to comment on, gee, that must be frustrating, Ellen, and really encourage you to speak to what was frustrating about it, because my stomach was churning for you. So I felt that I know you were so self-controlled about it all, and you were not going to blow up in front of your kids and so on, but a lot of frustration.
Yeah, I agree with much of what's been said. I felt your restraint, Ellen. I felt and heard and witnessed your restraint. I also thought it was powerful that you said that anger went deep in your body. And I would be curious to ask where in your body you felt the anger, and whether you would like to talk in the session about your anger, because restraint had to be so important at the time of the unpacking. Mm-hmm. And have you created space in your life for your anger?
You know, in the whole story, there was only one sentence that I really picked up on, because she found already, she's already processed it to be complete, to find how this thing could have had a good, I don't know, like, what do we learn from things or whatever, where she said, it was worth the cost I came to know it was worth the cost for my children to experience 4 years internationally. So it was like this, there was a cost, but it's still, you know, the benefit, and I thought that was really cool that how you'd process that to have a, it justified it, but it still was crazy making. No.
Thank you. Thank you all. And Elizabeth, thank you particularly because that sentence went right by me. Where do you, in her body? And I thought, oops. I mean, I was writing notes, but that's so important. And it went right by me probably because I was writing notes. I don't know, but I thought, but good thing there's a good coach on the line to pick that up. I want to repeat that, but I want to add, two more. We have two more exercises to do, and we'll do that all, and we'll end at 1:30. I want to add the last two points under Listens Actively, and then we'll repeat the exercise we just did. Points 5 and 6 in the competency under Listens Actively say, integrates the client's words, tone of voice, and body language to determine the full meaning of what is being communicated. Bring in their words, their tone, and their body language in order to understand what's being communicated. And 6, notice trends in the client's behavior and emotions across sessions to discern themes and patterns. So this obviously is an ongoing coaching relationship, but I have long thought that being able to connect dots is a superpower. The best trainers I knew on Thursday would say, do you remember Monday morning when we started and I asked you this? Now does it make, and I'd go, like, oh my gosh, they planned this, instructional design. They planned it. They're connecting the dots for me. Notice trends in the client's behavior and emotion across sessions so that we can identify themes and patterns. That may not work in this setting, but with our ongoing clients, absolutely. Who has an example they'd like to share? And we will listen again and we will add in now 6. Six skills. I'd like to share a short example with us so we can listen. Shalil, thank you. You go right ahead and start.
So what I'm going to share with you is something that happened a very, very long time ago when I was still a student. And that was a time that I actually got my first dog. I had been wanting to have a dog for a long time. And it finally came to a point where I would be spending the first 3 years of my graduation. We have a three-year course in India. And I would be spending that at home, which also meant that it made it easy for me to raise a dog. And I got her. And I got Girlie when she was about 6 weeks old. And my family was not particularly very fond of dogs. We come from the Muslim community, and there is an anathema towards dogs. And that was definitely there. My mother was hemming and hawing. My dad was just very neutral about the entire thing. But I still got the dog. I got her. And for the first week, she was in my room. And that was the time that she really bonded with me. And it was great to have her with me. And a week later, we got her kennel fixed up. And then she moved in, and the first 3 days was just pure torture for her. And it was pure torture for me because I could see her from my bedroom window. And I knew that I had to be strong and make sure that she stayed there and not let her back in. As days passed, became months, weeks, and one fine day while I was away at classes during the day, she slipped out from the kennel, came into the house, went up the stairs to the first floor where my room was, stood in front of my door, closed door. Of course, I was not there at that time, and pawed at the door and sat there for a very, very long time until my mother noticed that that girlie was not in her kennel. And when she looked around, she saw her sitting in front of my door waiting for me. And that was the time that there was a turn, there was a change of heart in my mum's attitude towards dogs. It's not for nothing that they say that a dog is a man's best friend.
Thank you, Shalil. Thank you.
I just have a question, because I think part of active listening, I would like to know that I understand your dog's name, and I couldn't, Gully? What was her name?
Girly.
Girly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I'll go. I saw you, Shalil, looking up and off to the right to retrieve the memory. And so, you know, I was trying to read your face and listen to the tone of your voice to hear the emotion around it. And when I realized how attached you were to the dog, I mean, you talked about the 3 days and how it was torture for you to see her outside in the kennel. Yeah, I really felt for you in that, and the dog. And I wouldn't have been, you know, as a coach, I wouldn't have interrupted at any point. I would have let you at that point, because I wanted to learn more and hear the story. I was intrigued by, I really wanted to hear more. I wanted to hear the turning point for your mother. I would have wanted to understand more about the family dynamics there, and the context of your system there. Yeah, I mean, it felt very sweet to me, and also bold that given your culture and community, mm-hmm. that you would decide this for yourself. So as your coach, I would want to know more about your boldness and or the choice. So, yeah. I definitely want to know more about you and Girly. I'm curious.
And did they let her back in the house after that? That's what we all want to know. Did mom let her live in the house?
Well, she did come in every once in a while, but she was not permanently allowed in. But she would recognize when my mom was around. She would sense when my mom was around, and she would walk in when mom was not there. And yeah. She was very smart, and she knew exactly which side of the bread was buttered, so to speak.
Dang. Smart. God love the animals. They have so much intuition, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Shalil, oh, yeah. Thank you. What a great example. You would think I got a dog. National implications, cultural implications, family implications, just to start with, you'd think, well, it's a simple story. Really, it's within my client's systems. I want to do one more exercise, and this is for you. This is for you. So I invite you each to participate in this. And we'll start by identifying an inquiry, a question you would like more clarity around. It might be, what brings me peace? What brings me joy? What would the best outcome for me be here? What can I reasonably expect for myself? And any inquiry you hold around your life and understanding, take a moment right now, get that question in your mind. Get that question in your mind. When do I feel grounded? When do I feel peaceful? Anything you'd like to know. And what I'll invite you to do, I will keep time. I'm going to give you 3 minutes, which is a lot of time when you think about it. And you can go ahead and start if you're ready to just consider that question. Listen to yourself. Actively listen to yourself and hear the answers to your inquiry. I'll let you know when you have about 30 seconds remaining. You have a full minute remaining. And if you would wrap up, please. Okay. When we are complete towards the end and, you know, 6-7 minutes, I'd love to hear your takeaways from this big topic today. active listening. Right now, I invite you to share what you are comfortable sharing about the exercise you just did. Does that mean I have to tell you what I wrote about? No. Does that mean I have to tell you anything? You don't have to tell us anything. We're interested in your reaction to the process as a coach. So please feel to the level that you are share to the level you are comfortable. How was that exercise for you as an ICF professional?
Well, I was impressed with just asking myself a few questions about this topic, how much I advanced my thinking and my emotions about the topic. I feel like I, in just those 3 minutes, I really progressed myself in a valuable way.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
My question changed. Started with one question, and it didn't take long before I kind of scratched out and put different words on for a, I don't want to say a broader question, but there was more there than just about my concern. My husband just a couple of days ago got a new diagnosis of a cancer coming back. And so I have some fear, you know, but the question got broader, like, who do I need to be here? Right. How, what do my kids need? And all that kind of stuff. So my question changed and it felt more approachable. The second question, you know,
more approachable. That's an interesting word, Terry.
I'm a fixer. So, and I mean, not, I don't, I say that in jest, but I guess it didn't feel like it had any direction before. I've been feeling like I'm spinning, and this helped me give it some context or something, like, you know, it's more actionable than I was initially thinking. I mean, when I think about how to help my kids and things like that, you know, not just, oh my God, I might lose him, but my kids, who do I need to, you know, I mean, it just gave me more of a groundedness in an ungrounded situation, I guess.
Thank you.
Terry, I'm sorry about your news.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
I know you've been there. It sucks.
It does.
This was an experience of you hearing yourself. What was that like?
I could breathe. I couldn't at first. I could exhale, kind of. It was like, there's a process. Just get it out of your head, get it on paper. And I guess hearing myself at first it wasn't what I wanted to hear from myself, but I was forced to sit there and write about it for 3 minutes, and it took some form, and it went to a much better place.
I have a question for each of you. Is this something you might use or adapt and use with a coaching client? What made me think of that was Terry is after my own heart. She said, I was forced to sit here for 3 minutes because that was the exercise. 3 minutes, which is a lot of time when you're doing that. Is this something you might use or adapt and use with a client?
You know, Anne, you read my mind, because I was thinking, I'm going to stop my clients, things they won't tell me, but they know their own inquiries, right? And have them do it right in the coaching call, because they won't do it otherwise. People won't stop and do, you know, sometimes. And then how much richer the conversation would be, or the coaching life of with that client will be, I think. I'm gonna risk it. I'll let you know how it goes, you guys.
Thank you. We have about 3 minutes left, so I would like to start hearing your takeaways. Big topic today. We started with presence and looking back. That was our first half hour, but it was such a rich discussion, and presence is so important to us. And we've been talking about listening, covering a lot. What did you learn about yourself today?
I learned that I need to look more into the context clues. I guess that's a word I would use. All these things that were mentioned, you know, the culture a person is involved in, and the religion. And, you know, there's so, it colors everything. And I can't project my experiences on any of that, right? So there's more context. I love to listen deep, but there's a broader context that I need to consider. And I think that the client will feel much more respected and seen if I can inquire that way. And I love that question, Anne, and I'm going to change my new client things. I'm going to see how that goes. That's an awesome question to add, you know?
Which question are you referring to, Terry?
I even wrote the dang thing down.
Oh, 6.1.
How has your context, identity, environment, experience, values, and beliefs shaped who you are today? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We have 1 minute left. What are you taking away from today?
I think 6.1, lifting that off, including it into the client contract, I think is a big, big takeaway for me today. Well, having said that, when it actually comes down to brass tacks, when you're sitting across the table or a computer screen or on Zoom, one thing that really didn't come out specifically is that if your authentic curiosity comes into play, your listening is also going to be sharper. Mm. But your listening is also connected so strongly to your presence.
Mm-hmm. They really are presence and listening. Presence and listening. We're at 1:30, so I do want to honor your time and thank you so much for being here today. I will be back with you on Wednesday, and the competency that will be discussed next Monday is evokes awareness. That will be the topic on Monday. And thank you to our volunteers for this Wednesday. I'm going to go ahead and turn off our recording, and I will be here if you have any questions on anything else.